From KGW News, this is Straight Talk with Laurel Porter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Laurel Porter. There is a good chance you have heard my next guest's name. He's worn a number of law enforcement hats in the Portland area. Mike Reese was one of Portland's longest-serving police chiefs and retired in 2015. But his retirement didn't last long. He was appointed Multnomah County Sheriff in August of 2016, then was elected that November and re-elected in 2018 and served until 2022 when his term ended. And he retired again. But once again, not for long. Last fall, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek appointed him the director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. In that new role, Reese oversees 12 correctional institutions, 12,000 inmates, more correctly now called adults in custody, and more than 4,400 employees, a state agency with a budget of $2.3 billion, the fourth largest agency in the state. In appointing him, the governor said Mike Reese has an unparalleled record within the public safety sector for being a collaborator and a problem solver, guided by justice, equity, and a commitment to uphold the public's trust, unquote. And Reese has his work cut out for him. He takes over at a time when the department faces many challenges, including a staffing shortage, how to stop the flow of smuggled drugs into the prisons, and addressing problems cited in a state report at Oregon's only women's prison, Coffee Creek Correctional Center in Wilsonville. Here to tell us how he plans to meet those challenges and about his goals as the head of Oregon's prison system, welcome to my guest, the director of Oregon's Department of Corrections, Mike Reese. Welcome to Straight Talk. It's nice to have you back here.
Laurel, it's so nice to see you again.
Well, you know, I remember going to your retirement party when you retired as police chief in 2015, but you weren't ready to retire. As I mentioned, you became sheriff. Now in your new role, the Department of Corrections. What keeps you going? Why not retire?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One, I'm having fun doing what I'm doing. I really enjoy being of service to the community, and I feel like I still have something to give. And my wife likes to say I keep failing retirement, but it's just an honor to have this opportunity to serve.
Well, the governor appointed you to this position last fall. Was it a surprise, or is this something you aspired to do?
It was a surprise. I didn't know the position was open, and I was contemplating what would be my next public service opportunity, and got a call from the governor and asked to talk to me about this position. I was very intrigued, went down and met with her, and she convinced me it was the right opportunity.
She can be very convincing, I'm sure. What's your number one goal of this massive prison system? What do you want to achieve the most?
Well, I think there's three things that I'm focused on. First and foremost is our employee wellness, making sure that our employees feel like they're supported and they have the tools and resources to be successful in their work with our adults in custody. It's a really challenging time in public safety coming out of a pandemic where congregate settings were at such risk, and the staff worked so hard to save lives and, you know, to manage these immense operations during a pandemic. So focusing on our employee wellness, filling vacancies, getting the staff trained and set up for success. The second area that I really want to be of service in is to the AICs, the adults in custody, making sure that they have the resources necessary so that when they leave our custody, which 95% of them do, we want to make sure that they're successful in re-entering our communities, and that way we reduce recidivism and we keep all of our communities safer.
And is there a third one? I think you mentioned three.
The last thing is this aging infrastructure and aging technology. I was really surprised when I came to the Department of Corrections to walk through the Oregon State Penitentiary, our second largest institution, and it has about 2,000 adults in custody. It was built 100 years ago. It's in the housing units. You've got five stories of housing units and no elevators. It's just an aging infrastructure that doesn't support the good work that we're trying to do with the adults in custody. The other side of that is this aging technology. So our foundational technology that we use was built in the 1980s. So think about computers from 1989 And that's what we're still using at the Department of Corrections to manage the data and information that we collect.
We'll talk more about the Oregon State Penitentiary, that 100-year-old structure, a little bit later in the show. But let's take a look for our viewers to see how massive this system is. You oversee 12 institutions, prisons, and facilities all over the state. We have a list here, and it covers all corners of the state, from Portland and Salem to Lakeview, Tillamook, Ontario, Baker City, Pendleton, Madras, I mean, on and on. Now, you do have a background in public safety, as we mentioned, and you oversaw the Multnomah County Jail as sheriff, but this is a whole nother level. It must be overwhelming. How are you ramping up?
You know, I feel like I'm getting hit with a fire hose every single day as I go down to Salem to begin my workday. It is immense, and each of these institutions is like its own little city. You've got doctors and nurses, corrections officers, facility management teams, and they all run under the direction of a superintendent. So we have a great leadership team in place. I couldn't do my good work without the great work that's happening across the state in each of these institutions.
You've been on a listening tour all around the state.
I have.
What are you hearing from people?
You know, I think as I visit the institutions, the staff want us to focus on filling vacancies. So, for example, in the corrections officer ranks, we've got over 200 vacancies. That means a lot of staff are working mandatory overtime. So instead of going home at the end of their shift and seeing their family, they're being told by a supervisor, hey, we don't have enough people to work the next shift. We need you to stay over for 4 more hours. That's demoralizing. So we've got to fix that. And that's the number one issue for the staff. I think as we look at how we fill those vacancies, we're going to have to be innovative. Everybody's hiring right now. It's a tough time in a lot of different professions, but especially in public safety. It's really challenging to hire the really good people that we need to hire, and processes that can take, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 months.
Well, when you talk about overtime, that would go right to staff wellness, right?
That's
trying
right.
to address that. Where do you have the biggest shortage when it comes to the workforce?
I think there's three institutions that have the most challenges. Our women's prison at Coffee Creek, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit later. We've got some staffing challenges there. Eastern Oregon, our facility in Pendleton, our facility in Umatilla, they have staffing challenges. Even the Oregon State Penitentiary has some challenges.
We're going to put up a link for people if they'd like to find out more information about joining the Department of Corrections as a staff member. As we look at the link and give people that resource, what can you tell people to encourage them that it might be a good job to pursue?
Well, it is a great career. And if you want to be in public safety and you want to have a positive impact on people's lives, join the Department of Corrections. I think we're transforming lives every single day. We do our very best work with the adults in custody, trying to provide them educational programs, substance use disorder programs, meet their health care needs, and just support them so that when they're released, they can be successful.
You talked about 95% of the adults in custody will eventually be released.
That's right.
And you want to give them the treatment, the training, the resources they need to be successful on the outside. What are some of the programs that you're offering?
Well, some substance use disorder treatment programs and medication-assisted treatment are one of the most foundational needs inside our institutions. Over 60% of the people in custody have addiction issues. So providing Suboxone and Sublocade, two of the main drugs for opioid disorder, is really important. Just getting people into treatment classes and programs. We're developing a peer mentorship program. So adults in custody that want to work inside our institutions in treatment programs, we're doing the training now to allow them to do that. And then when they're released from custody, maybe they can help fill vacancies in our partner agencies and, you know, the treatment world outside too.
I want to talk to you about education in the prisons because last year I had on Larry Miller, who was a Trailblazer president and a Nike executive, who wrote a book about his life. And he revealed in that book that when he was a teenager, he was a gang member back east, and he murdered another teenager and served time in prison. But he credits the ability to turn his life around in a lot of ways to the education he got. He got his GED, which I understand you can get in the Oregon prison system, but he also got his bachelor's degree. And then he went on to get his MBA through a work release program. Is it possible for these adults in custody to get higher education in Oregon's prison system?
You know, absolutely. We have a really robust relationship with higher ed at the Department of Corrections. We work with the University of Oregon. We work with Corbin University. We work with Chemeketa, Treasure Valley. You know, we have a lot of opportunities for adults in custody to get their GED. A lot of them do need that you know, basic education, and then moving into the college classes. So you can move into a community college program, transition that into classes at Portland State. We have, you know, online classes as well as in-person classes. We have adults in custody that are graduating right now from Corbin University and Portland State, and they've got bachelor's degrees that they then, when they're released, they can take and use that for employment opportunities or to move on. It's just a wonderful opportunity inside our prisons to get an education that will pay dividends when you're released.
Another opportunity could be in construction, and there's a lot of construction jobs. I'm just had on some folks from the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project, and they're going to need thousands of workers. Are there place programs that you have when people can train for construction jobs?
We do that as well. So not everybody wants to move into higher education. Some people really like the trades. And I think that at DOC, you know, these 12 cities are really areas where the adults in custody give back to the community that they live in. So when we have plumbing issues or electrical issues or carpentry, the adults in custody learn the skills to do the work inside the institution. So we may have a master tradesman, a journeyman plumber, who's teaching our AICs how to be plumbers. We have some of those AICs that then when they're released go into journeyman programs. Coffee Creek has a great program. We had one of the women who had been incarcerated, released. She is a journeyman plumber now. She came back and did a presentation with a bunch of business owners, you know, the folks that work in contracting, telling the women in custody, if you're interested in the trades, this is a wonderful opportunity. And as a woman, you'll go right to the top of the list for journeyman programs.
So needed. Those workers are so needed. I want to ask you about a Street Roots newspaper article that they reported that deaths in Oregon's prison system have been on the rise, even though the population has been declining. It said an average of 49 prisoners died each year in Oregon State Prison since 2020. And that represents, according to the article, a 45% increase over the annual deaths in the previous 20 years. It also reported 12 deaths this year as of May 10th. How do you explain that increase in deaths? And how concerned are you about that?
Well, I think looking at those numbers, they include the pandemic. And certainly in 2020 and 2021, we saw a significant increase in deaths in custody, like we did in our community settings as well. The pandemic was hard on all of us, both inside our institutions and outside. So, of course, there were, you know, some really unfortunate deaths of people in custody associated to COVID. This year, you know, as you pointed out, we've had a number of deaths in custody. Each one of those unfortunate situations is investigated by the Oregon State Police and the Medical Examiner's Office. So they do an independent examination to understand what happened and to provide us feedback on how we may do better. I do want your viewers to understand that we have an aging population in custody. You know, I was talking about Oregon State Penitentiary. And when I walked into my first visit of the penitentiary, the bottom tier, so it's five stories of housing units, 40 cells on each floor, and the bottom floor had a wheelchair, a walker outside every unit. We have over, you know, about 1,000 adults in custody that are over the age of 60. So their 60 is not my 60. You know, they present about 15 years older than their chronological age. So we have an aging population in custody. Our average age right now is 42. 20 years ago, when the Street Roots was looking at that data, the average age was 36. So the entire population in our custody is aging. That's true across the United States. It's not unique to Oregon.
Well, the activists quoted in that article also blame, though, in addition to the things you said, COVID-19, the aging population, poor health care, and a lack of accountability and transparency. How do you respond to that?
Well, I can't speak to what's happening in other states, but I know in Oregon that we do provide very good health care to the adults in custody. Many of the folks that come into our institutions have unmet health care needs from a lifetime of poor decision making sometimes, addiction issues, lack of affordable health care. So they come into our institutions in high need. We do everything we can to meet the healthcare needs of the adults in custody. And, you know, whether it's our own doctors and nurses or outside providers, we're trying to find a way to meet those healthcare needs that can be really severe.
Well, that brings us to Coffee Creek. So let's talk about the only women's prison in Oregon, in Wilsonville. About 800 women are incarcerated there. A state report last year, before you were appointed director, uncovered problems of sexual abuse and a culture of retaliation that the report said discourages women and staffers from coming forward to report wrongdoing. How are you addressing those problems?
You know, I'm deeply concerned about that report and the underlying information it uncovered. We had some staff members that were engaged in reprehensible criminal conduct. They've been adjudicated in the, or will be adjudicated in the criminal justice system appropriately. And any misconduct we investigate and take very seriously. Retaliation can't be tolerated. And we want to be able to have systems in place that allow the adults in custody to honestly provide us information that if we have staff engaged in misconduct, we can hold them accountable for it. The vast majority of the people that we work with in corrections are doing really good work. They want us to hold accountable the folks that are responsible for this misconduct.
Another report in February talking about health care, the National Commission on Correctional Health Care issued a 72-page report that found a backlog of nearly 600 medical appointments for the women in custody at Coffee Creek. One woman quoted in the report, according to the Capital Chronicle, said, "You have to be dying to see medical." The report said women had to wait 6 months or longer to get scans, tests, treat, or diagnose medical problems. How are you addressing that problem?
Well, let me just say that's unacceptable. You know, that type of delay in providing people medical care. When we looked at the information in the audit that we voluntarily participate in, this national association, when we looked at the information in the audit, there were gaps in the services we were providing. And quite frankly, we have some personnel investigations underway to hold responsible the folks that made decisions that led to poor health care. Some of that happened during the pandemic. We shifted resources, it's my understanding, to managing through a healthcare crisis. And some of the practices and policies and processes, just because, you know, the nature of the pandemic, you know, were left aside and we focused on other areas. We need to get back to where we were.
Some advocacy groups are suggesting that you close Coffee Creek altogether and instead open up regional facilities so the women can be closer to their families and communities and avoid some of these problems you're talking about. What do you think of that idea?
I think it would be incredibly costly. You know, siting a prison is challenging. And if we were to site a prison in multiple communities, even if it's small, you know, 300 or 400 beds, it would be incredibly challenging to do that. And the duplication of resources and costs. Each of these is little cities. You know, you can't create a 300 or 400 city without all of the infrastructure. And, you know, we have looked at should we move Coffee Creek and the women in that facility to another location, to another venue. The reality is, you know, having it in Wilsonville allows for the women in custody to stay connected to their support network. Most of the offenders that we see in our system come from the Valley. And so having institutions in that I-5 corridor, it allows for easy transportation and access to their families and their support systems.
So that's a no.
That's a long answer to say no. Yeah, I don't think that would be economically feasible and also the right thing to do.
Director Reese, we need to take a break. When we come back, though, we're going to talk about the possibility of building a new prison. Not Coffee Creek, but another one. We're back in 2 minutes. Welcome back to Straight Talk. I'm Laurel Porter. We're talking about the state of Oregon's massive agency, the Department of Corrections, which includes 12 prisons and facilities, 12,000 adults in custody, and more than 4,400 employees. We're pleased to have with us the new director of the Department of Corrections, Mike Reese. Once again, it's great to have you here.
Laurel, thank you.
I know one of the other problems I mentioned at the top of the show you're dealing with is the smuggling of drugs into the prison. And you told us that 60% of the population have some sort of substance abuse disorder. But you'd think that it would be difficult, and they shouldn't be, getting into the prison, these drugs. How are they getting in, and what are you doing to stop it?
You know, it's really a challenging area for us, whether it's drugs coming into the system or weapons. Contraband is always something, whether you're running a jail system or a prison system, you're always on the lookout for. I think fundamentally, you know, when you have people with addiction issues, you got to meet the need. That means the medication-assisted treatment, as well as the treatment programs. I think when we increase our effort in these areas, and we're doing that right now, we've got about 600 adults in custody receiving Suboxone or Sublocade right now. We're hiring treatment providers right now to provide treatment programs. When we meet the need, then we're going to see the desire to bring contraband in. We hope that'll go down. But that's not our only way of stopping that contraband. We have detection systems at the front doors. We have mail detection systems, because one of you asked, how do they get it in? The mail is one of the most challenging areas for us. The adults in custody can be, and their family and supporters on the outside can use our mail system to circumvent our detection system. So we have to be ever vigilant for that. We're looking at body scanners. So Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, when I was sheriff, we brought body scanners into our booking facility to scan people coming in, and that was effective. DOC wants to adopt that technology as well. We have two new canines that are drug detection dogs working in our facilities. And then we're testing the wastewater so we can see then what are the drugs that are being abused.
We mentioned the Oregon State Prison earlier, the 100-year-old facility, the penitentiary in Salem, where you have the MAX facility and also prisoners who were there because they were sentenced to death. You are talking about, or floating the idea, of building a new prison. Building prisons might not be a really popular idea. Why do you think it's needed? You hinted at this earlier.
Yeah, it's a 100-year-old facility. It's an aging facility with about $100 million in deferred maintenance right now. So we're weighing and working with the governor's office and key legislators on, should we rebuild it, repair it, replace it completely somewhere else? We'll be asking the legislature in the next legislative session for the money to do a feasibility study to answer some of these underlying questions. The fact is that institution doesn't meet our needs and the expectations of our community on how we care for and provide services to the adults in custody. For example, we want to do treatment programs there. We had to take a big crane and drop in a small building to house treatment programs because there's no place inside the institution.
You dropped a small building?
We dropped a small building inside the institution.
Wish we had video of that.
It was before I was director, but it's too small to do the treatment programs. We're looking at co-opting other spaces. It's an institution that doesn't meet our needs. And as the population ages, it gets harder and harder to house people in a five-story building with no elevators in the HVAC system. You know, in the summer, the top story in there can get up to, 115 degrees. So it's not where we want to house people. It's not where we want to have our staff work there. We do own property. The Department of Corrections has property that we've identified outside the city of Salem that we could build a prison. We have our Sandyam facility and our Oregon Correctional Facility out there. We have property out there that could house another prison and then allow the city of Salem to redevelop the land that OSP is on.
I'm going to jump in here because I wanted, on a lighter note, before we go, I wanted to let our viewers know that you and I were on the same team 10 years ago, almost exactly, the Wild Canyon Games, sponsored by Nike. This is our team that was out in Antelope, and we had an obstacle course. It was like a team building Nike corporate executive thing. You were our ringer.
No. Everybody had a skill set that we needed.
That was a medicine ball thing. I had to crawl through the mud, but you ran up that mountain. You were like a mountain goat. But now you're playing pickleball, you said, with your wife. You were telling me all about how fun that is.
We enjoy pickleball. We have a sailboat. We enjoy sailing. And I still run, bike, swim, and lift weights. And just, you have to do something to stay in shape.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Straight Talk. Thank you for your service to our state and good luck in your new role.
Laurel, you're very kind. Thank you so much.
And thank you for watching and listening to our podcast. If you'd like to get our podcast, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Just search for KGW Straight Talk. We'll see you next time for Straight Talk. Have a great week.